Welcome back, everyone. Ready for another deep dive?
Always.
Awesome. Today, we're going to be looking at some excerpts from Dr. August Kunkel's lectures on the Book of Chronicles.
One of my favorites.
Yeah, it's a fascinating book, for sure. Specifically, we're going to focus on that tricky transition from Solomon's reign to the divided kingdom.
Ah, yes, where things get really interesting.
Right. We're talking Rehoboam, Abijah, all that drama.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easy to fall into that simple good king versus bad king narrative.
Oh, absolutely.
But we're going to try to dig a little deeper, uncover the hidden story, so to speak. The stuff about taxes and forced labor, prophetic interventions, all those factors that really shaped this pivotal moment in biblical history.
I love that approach, peeling back the layers.
Exactly. So let's get started. The chronicler, he's a master storyteller, right?
He really is. So subtle.
Yeah, and he presents Solomon's reign as this golden age, all peace and prosperity. But
there's always a but, isn't there?
Right. There are these hints of trouble brewing beneath the surface.
Like little cracks in the foundation.
Exactly. We hear about all the incredible building projects, the vast harem, the expanding bureaucracy.
All those things require resources, and those resources had to come from somewhere.
From the people, right.
Of course.
Yeah.
And that's where the tension starts to build.
So how does the chronicler actually show us this growing discontent without explicitly stating it?
Well, he uses some really clever literary techniques. For example, he contrasts those early pledges of loyalty to David Jolly. Remember, all the tribes were united back then with the growing resentment that emerges under Solomon.
It's almost like he's dropping little hints, letting the reader connect the dots.
Exactly. It's not a direct critique of Solomon, but it's definitely there if you're paying attention.
So by the end of Solomon's reign, things are already a bit shaky, to say the least. Then Rehoboam, his son, comes to power.
And he inherits all of these simmering issues.
Right. And we need to remember the context here. This isn't just a simple father-son power struggle. We're talking about a whole system of forced labor, people being conscripted to work for the government for months at a time.
Can you imagine having to abandon your farm, your family, everything, just to go build a palace or a fortress?
It's almost unfathomable to us today.
Right. It would be like having to give up a huge chunk of your life, not just paying some taxes.
Brutal. So the system, it was obviously deeply resented, right?
Right, absolutely. And when Rehoboam comes to power, the people see an opportunity. They approach him, demand relief from these burdens.
So does he listen? Does he try to compromise?
Well,
yeah.
Let's just say he doesn't exactly handle the situation with grace and wisdom.
Oh, boy. This can't be good.
It's not. He basically tells them, my father punished you with whips, but I'll punish you with scorpions. Talk about arrogance.
Wow. Like adding fuel to the fire. So, of course, the people revolt.
They do. The northern tribes, led by Jeroboam, they decide they've had enough. And that's how the kingdom splits.
A pivotal moment, for sure. And it's interesting how the chronicler introduces this prophet, Shemaiah, right at this crucial juncture.
Oh, yes. Shemaiah. Such a fascinating character. He steps in and prevents all-out war between the two factions.
It's amazing how these seemingly minor characters can have such a huge impact.
The chronicler is really good at highlighting those turning points.
So what does Shemaiah say? What's his message?
It's all about brotherhood. He reminds both sides that they are still one people, descendants of Abraham.
Despite their political differences.
Exactly. It's this powerful message of unity and reconciliation. Really needed in that moment.
So the kingdom is divided, but there's still this sense of shared heritage.
Thanks to Shemaiah's intervention.
Right. Okay, so Rehoboam is left to rule over Judah, the southern kingdom.
A much smaller kingdom than what his father had ruled.
But the story doesn't end there, does it?
Not at all. Now the chronicler shifts his focus to Rehoboam's successor, Abijah.
And the conflict reignites, right, between Judah and the northern kingdom.
It does. And this is where I think the chronicler's deeper message really starts to come into focus.
Okay, I'm intrigued. It would be so easy to portray this as just a simple good versus evil kind of conflict, but I feel like there's more to it.
Oh, definitely. The chronicler, he uses Abijah's speech before the battle to offer a much more nuanced perspective.
Okay, let's dive into that. Tell me more.
What's fascinating, he doesn't just demonize Jeroboam. He acknowledges Rehoboam's failures, too. He talks about his inexperience,
yeah.
How that created an opportunity for exploitation.
So he's showing us that there's blame to go around. It's not so black and white.
Exactly. And the complexity is so important. The chronicler isn't letting Rehoboam off the hook, but he's also showing us how Jeroboam capitalized on the situation. And I think he's making a subtle point about leadership here.
What kind of point?
that even legitimate grievances, real problems, they can be twisted and used for personal gain. Ambition can corrupt even the best intentions.
That's deep. So how does this speech actually play out? Does it convince the northern tribes to come back to Judah?
Oh, no. It actually leads to a battle. And here's where things get even more interesting from a theological perspective. Abijah wins a decisive victory. He restores Judah's borders. And Jeroboam, he dies.
Wow. So the chronicler is presenting this as divine judgment.
He is. And I think he's reinforcing this idea that God is ultimately in control, even amidst all the human ambition and conflict.
I'm definitely seeing a pattern here. It feels like the chronicler is using these historical events to teach us something deeper about God, about leadership, about the consequences of our choices.
That's exactly it. He's not just giving us a dry historical account.
He's inviting us to consider the bigger picture.
Right. And I think it's so relevant to our lives today. This idea of divine judgment, it's easy to oversimplify it.
Like good guys win, bad guys lose kind of thing.
Exactly. But the chronicler is suggesting something much more nuanced.
Okay, help me understand that. What's he trying to say?
He's showing us that God is working through history, even when things seem messy, even when they seem unjust, and that even in moments of victory, there's a need for humility, a recognition that God is sovereign.
So it's not just about winning or losing.
It's about recognizing that God's purposes are ultimately playing out, even in the midst of these conflicts.
That's powerful. And it definitely connects to our own lives, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Think about the challenges we face, the decisions we make. The chronicler, he's reminding us that we're not in control.
We like to think we are, but...
But there's a bigger story unfolding. And aligning ourselves with God's will is essential.
It's a humbling thought that we're part of something much larger than ourselves.
And that's where seeking God's guidance becomes so important.
Not just in times of conflict.
Right. In all areas of life. Always seeking his wisdom.
Okay, so we've talked about Solomon's legacy, the division of the kingdom, Rehoboam's disastrous response, the intervention of Shemaiah, Abijah's victory. It's a lot to process. What are the key takeaways you think our listeners should really hold on to? What are the big ideas here?
Well, first, I think the chronicler is showing us that even seemingly idyllic times, like Solomon's reign, they can mask deeper issues. He encourages us to look beyond the surface, to consider the complexities of power, leadership, the consequences of our choices.
So basically, things aren't always as they appear.
Exactly. Second, he highlights the dangers of pride and arrogance. Rehoboam's refusal to listen to the people, that led to the division of the kingdom. It's a powerful reminder of the importance of humility, of recognizing our own limitations.
Don't let pride get in the way of wisdom.
Right. And finally, I think he really emphasizes the importance of seeking God's guidance.
Especially in times of turmoil and conflict.
Exactly. He reminds us that even amidst all the human ambition and political maneuvering, God is working through history to accomplish his purposes.
It's comforting in a way, isn't it?
It is. Knowing that there's a bigger plan at play, even when things seem chaotic and uncertain.
And it challenges us, right?
It does. To align our lives with that plan, to seek God's will, and to trust that he is ultimately in control.
Powerful stuff. Lots to think about. And I think we're going to continue unpacking this in our next segment. We'll be back after a short break, so stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the Book of Chronicles. We were just talking about the division of the kingdom, the rise of Rehoboam and Abijah, and all those fascinating insights from the chronicler. It's really a pivotal period in biblical history, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So much happening, so many layers to uncover.
Right. And we were starting to get into the chronicler's deeper message, like what he's really trying to teach us through these events.
It's more than just a history lesson, that's for sure.
Exactly. So before the break, we were talking about Abijah's speech, how he kind of justifies Judah's position.
Right, right. He's responding to the whole situation with the northern kingdom.
And you were saying that the chronicler uses this speech to present a more nuanced perspective.
He does. It's not a simplistic good versus evil kind of thing.
Yeah, it's not just about demonizing Jeroboam and the northern tribes.
Exactly. It's more complex than that. He acknowledges that Rehoboam messed up big time.
Right. His inexperience, his arrogance.
Yeah. And that created this opportunity for exploitation, which is kind of what Jeroboam did.
So there's blame to go around. It's not as clear cut as it might seem at first glance.
Exactly. And I think that's a really important point. The chronicler, he's showing us that even in these situations where there are legitimate grievances, where people have real reasons to be upset, things can get complicated. Yeah. Motives aren't always pure.
That's a good point. So what happens after this speech? Does it change anything? Do the northern tribes reconsider?
No. Not really. It actually leads to a battle.
Of course it does. Well, what's the outcome?
Abijah wins. Decisively. He restores Judah's borders. And, well, Jeroboam doesn't fare so well.
He dies.
He does. And this is where the chronicler's theological perspective, it really comes to the forefront.
You keep mentioning this theological perspective. Can you explain what you mean by that for those of us who might not be, you know, theology experts?
Sure, sure. Basically, it's the lens through which the chronicler is viewing these events. He's not just a neutral observer. He's writing from a place of faith. And he's trying to help us understand God's role in all of this.
Okay, that makes sense. So when you say the chronicler's theological perspective comes to the forefront here, you mean?
Well, he's presenting Abijah's victory. And Jeroboam's death is divine judgment, God intervening in human affairs.
Interesting. So it's more than just a military victory. It's a statement about God's power, God's justice.
Exactly. And I think this reinforces this idea that God is ultimately in control, even amidst all the human ambition and all the conflict.
You know, it strikes me that the chronicler is doing something really clever here. He's using these historical events to teach us something deeper. It's not just a dry recitation of facts and dates.
It's a story. A story with a purpose.
And a message. A message about God, about leadership, about the consequences of our choices.
Right. He's inviting us to think critically about these events, to see the bigger picture. And I think that's so important even today. We can get so caught up in the day-to-day, in the immediate drama of a situation.
Yeah, like who's right, who's wrong, who's winning, who's losing.
Right. And we forget to step back and ask those bigger questions. What's God doing here? What's the lesson?
We were talking about divine judgment earlier. It's easy to think of it in a very simplistic way.
Oh, absolutely. Like the good guys always win, the bad guys always get punished.
Right. But the chronicler, he seems to be suggesting something a bit more nuanced, something more complex.
Definitely. He's showing us that God is working through history, even when things seem messy, even when they seem unjust.
And that even in moments of victory,
we need to stay humble. We need to recognize God's sovereignty.
It's like he's saying, don't get too big for your britches.
Yeah, basically. There's always a bigger picture, always something more to consider.
So it's not just about who wins or loses. It's about understanding how God is working through all of it.
To accomplish his purposes.
Which are ultimately good, right?
We trust they are, even when we don't fully understand them, even when things look dark.
That's a powerful reminder. And it really connects to our own lives, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The chronicler, he's not just talking about ancient history. He's talking about us, about our challenges, our decisions, the way we approach life.
He's reminding us that we're not in control.
There's a bigger story unfolding. And we need to be aware of that. We need to seek God's guidance in everything we do.
It's humbling, really, to think that we're part of something much larger than ourselves.
And yet our choices still matter. They have consequences.
We have a role to play in this grand drama.
Exactly. And I think that's both exciting and a little bit terrifying, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot of responsibility, but also incredibly inspiring to know that we're not just wandering around aimlessly. There's a purpose.
There is. And that's what the chronicler is trying to help us discover, to find our place in God's story.
This is so good. I'm loving this deep dive. And I can't wait to keep exploring this with you in our next segment.
We too. There's so much more to unpack here.
We'll be back after a quick break, so don't go anywhere.
Welcome back to our deep dive into the Book of Chronicles. We've been unpacking some pretty heavy stuff today.
We have. The division of the kingdom, divine judgment, the complexities of leadership. Lots to ponder. But before we wrap up, I wanted to circle back to something you said earlier about the chronicler's theological perspective.
Right. Remember, he's not just giving us a neutral historical account.
He's writing from a place of faith, trying to help us understand God's role in all of this.
Exactly. And one of the things that strikes me is how he seems to be suggesting that even the division of the kingdom, this seemingly tragic event, might actually have a deeper purpose in God's plan.
That's interesting. So it's not just about judging these kings as good or bad.
Right. It's about understanding their actions within this broader theological framework, seeing how God might be working through history, even when things get messy.
I like that. It's a more nuanced perspective, isn't it? It's not just black and white, good versus evil.
Exactly. And I think it raises a really thought-provoking question for us as we reflect on these ancient accounts. If the chronicler can find meaning and purpose, even in the division of a kingdom, how might that change our understanding of the conflicts and challenges we face in our own lives?
Oh, wow, that's a good one. So instead of getting caught up in the immediate drama of a situation,
Right. Who's right, who's wrong?
we could try to step back and see the bigger picture, like the chronicler does.
Exactly. What if, instead of just labeling situations as good or bad, we tried to understand the underlying causes, the motivations, the complex web of choices that lead to conflict?
And what if we approached those conflicts with humility, seeking God's guidance and wisdom, even when we don't understand what's happening?
That's a powerful challenge. It's so easy to get stuck in our own limited perspectives.
Right. But the chronicler, he invites us to see things from a more expansive viewpoint, one that acknowledges both the brokenness of human actions and the possibility of God's redemptive work.
He doesn't offer easy answers or simplistic solutions.
Yeah, he's not giving us a formula for how to avoid conflict or guarantee success.
Instead, he challenges us to wrestle with the complexities of history and to seek God's guidance in navigating our own journeys.
Love that. So, to wrap things up, we've explored this turbulent transition from Solomon's reign to the division of the kingdom. We've seen how the chronicler uses these subtle narrative techniques to reveal the tensions and motivations behind these events.
And we've been challenged to consider the deeper theological message woven throughout his account.
Right. We've talked about how pride and arrogance can lead to disastrous consequences.
And how even legitimate grievances can be manipulated for personal gain.
But we've also been reminded of the importance of seeking God's guidance, even in the midst of all the chaos and uncertainty.
It's comforting in a way, isn't it? Knowing that there's a bigger plan at play.
It is. It gives us hope, and it helps us to make sense of those times when life feels really, really hard.
Exactly. So, for anyone who wants to delve deeper into this fascinating period of biblical history, we highly recommend exploring the full text of Chronicles.
Yeah, and there are tons of great commentaries and scholarly works out there, too.
You can really get lost in this stuff. But even just reading the text itself, it can be so enriching. It really speaks to us across the centuries.
And as you continue your own explorations, we encourage you to keep this question in mind. How might the chronicler's perspective change your understanding of conflicts, both historical and personal? What deeper meaning and purpose might you find, even in those situations that seem challenging or painful?
It's a question worth pondering, and it might just lead you to some unexpected discoveries.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We hope it sparked your curiosity and inspired you to continue seeking, questioning, and exploring the depths of knowledge and faith.
And we'll see you next time for another adventure in the world of ancient texts.
Bye for now.